tonight. NBC Charlotte sports director Nick Carboni stops by with his take on the Panthers' preseason win over the Chicago Bears.
One Panther Podcast. John Ellis.
All right, welcome into the One Panther Podcast. I'm John Ellis. Thank you for joining us this week. We appreciate you. Big show today. Nick Carboni from WCNC Charlotte. He's the sports director there. And he's a good friend. Going to join us on a 20-minute chat in just a little bit. You want to chat with us? Go to onepantherplace.com or check us out at One Panther Place. A little preseason action, a little game against the Bears. A lot of flashing going on from some defensive guys. The rookies are looking good. Everybody's feeling great. Yeah. Well, let me tell you something here. It's a preseason game, okay? Pump those brakes, folks. Pump them. Got a long way to go here. That felt like a fourth preseason game, did it not? Where were the starters? Well, that's part of what they're doing now. The analytics division here with Carolina and the emphasis on keeping guys fresh. You didn't see anybody in that starting lineup that stood out as one of the key component guys. No McCaffrey, no Cam, no Luke, no Olsen, no McCoy, no Short. And it was largely by design. Keekly, there's some speculation that he's dealing with a concussion issue again. Don't buy into it. Don't buy the hype. The media wants to pump that story up. They love to get the clicks. He's not in the concussion protocol. Luke seems fine. Everybody else seems fine. Ron clearly doesn't want to talk about it. Luke clearly doesn't want to talk about it. So, as a journalist, out of respect to that, I yield to the others to make those calls, to ask those questions. I understand they have to be asked. I'll say this. I'm highly confident that Luke will be ready week one, and I'm highly confident he won't play this preseason. So there you have it. Takeaways from the preseason game. Here we go. Good to see Marcus Haynes lighting things up in the passing game on his rush there. Now, the guy he's going against there, clearly not headed for Canton anytime soon. But still, Haynes has been a guy who has patiently waited his turn in Carolina. Good to see him step in, first team, make a good opportunity of that, and show some things that he can do. Brian Burns, to me, a much more impactful product there. Burns played 10 snaps. He got two sacks, 20% sack rate. Okay, extrapolate that all you want all day, eggheads, and say, this is going to be 64 sacks this year. No, it's not. He was going against a couple of truck drivers at left tackle. All right, so pumping the brakes on those two again. Attaboy for Burns, but you're going against some guys that clearly won't be playing first team anytime soon in the league. Still made the most of his opportunities. Got off the field healthy. Very good to see. Godwin, number 17, old Terry Godwin from University of Georgia. What a game for this guy, huh? He played the most snaps out of all the wide receivers. And the 57-yard punt return down the near sideline. Let me tell you something about that punt return, too, okay? You study tape, you watch special teams play. That's not just wide open lane that he's taking advantage of here and just great blocking. He presses the hole on those blocks like Emmitt Smith would back in the day on this offensive line. He set those blocks up, made a great cut, and showed that acceleration down the sidelines. What a weapon, huh? And then Damian Jean-Pierre, our buddy that we've been talking to and chatting about during camp here. He's our dark horse favorite for this year. Showed that blazing speed. It got called back for a penalty that had nothing to do with the play. But he got a good 20 yards on a punt return that looked effortless. So again, we want to keep an eye on 83. He's somebody to watch. Real good feeling about the special teams. Talk about this right here, okay? Chase Blackburn doing an outstanding job. Taking over the reins is the number one guy there running the special teams unit. He's the veteran who won a Super Bowl ring playing special teams under Tom Coughlin in New York. The punt return differential. It's a stat that gets talked about very little in this league, but it's an important stat, particularly when you're outgaining your opponent 131 to -3. Okay? That's 128 yards of field position that you're looking at. That's a full day of rushing for Ezekiel Elliott that the team gained over Chicago in advantage yards. 131 to -3. The coverage units were great. The effort was great. But hey, look, I'm giving them an A+ on the effort. I love the sports talk grades, by the way. You know, the bloggers and these guys that do the draft grades. A-. You know they do the A- for? Just to show they're tough. Just to show you they got a critical eye. No, I believe you're good. I believe you've got potential. But just to show you I ain't no pushover, A- goes for you. Nah, give the special teams a good grade last night. Very, very good to see Blackburn's units performing at a high level. Offensively, Kyle Allen is the guy at number two. No question about it. We've said that from day one. His performance in New Orleans last year was not a fluke. If you look at the tape, the throws he made against their first team defense were outstanding. That was not a walkthrough for him. That was a big opportunity against a nasty New Orleans first team defense. He lit him up. Came back in yesterday, managed the game exceptionally well, made a couple good throws. The pocket broke down again. He makes a great play where he pivots and runs out the pocket, gets some extra yardage, picks up another fourth down conversion on his feet off a bootleg like he did last year. He's got some wheels and he can scoot, and he's sneaky fast. More importantly, he's got a command on this offense and has the requisite tools to put the ball down the field. So you take Newton out at any point, whether it's injury or rest, hopefully it's not injury. Midseason, if Will has to step in, he'll pull the trigger on those throws. Will Greer's a rookie, and I don't want to beat this guy up. I don't want to beat him up at all. But I think we're looking at a little bit of an Alex Smith situation here. Okay? A little bit of a captain checkdown thing going on here. Now, I don't know if that's something they've encouraged him to do. I don't know if that's something he's just not confident enough in his reads. Could be he's playing with some scrubs back there that aren't blocking and aren't running the right routes. A lot goes on to a play. A lot of things are moving in a play. A lot of moving parts. So you don't want to throw it all in the quarterback. That's what we do in this league, but you don't want to do that. But you don't want to see the quarterback coming in there first start and checking it down and even missing a few checkdowns high and then throwing a pick. Now, Greer came back out, put together a stellar drive there, got some things going, and Holyfield got his redemption after the early fumble. Pretty easy dump-off pass touchdown, and then the second touchdown was a big boy run, okay? That's big-time stuff. Look at that film again. Go back and see that cut. Puts his foot in the ground, shakes a DB, burst to the end zone. You know, the knock on Holyfield is he had like a 6'4", 40 time or whatever people say. He's not slow. He's football quick. You get him inside the 5 or 10, he makes that run. You want him to run 40 yards on a line? Whatever, dude. That's not how you measure efficiency from a running back. Wide receivers, maybe. Running backs having a quick burst and good feet in tight space. Holyfield's got it. You can't fumble the ball, though, kid. Can't do it. Got to clean that up, man. Hopefully he will. I'll tell you this. Nobody works harder than Elijah Holyfield in practice. Nobody. I left camp the last session they had before their flight to Chicago. He was out there on the jugs machine 45 minutes after the last autograph, folks, went up to the locker room. Out there, just catching ball after ball after ball. Working on pass protection. Putting in the time to improving the results. He understands his weaknesses. He understands he's got to work on a few things. And it shows. It's improved. He's got good intensity in practice. And other than the fumble, he played fairly damn well in that game. And with the other rookie, Jordan Scarlett, the draft pick, by the way, from Florida, sideline now with a little bit of a back issue. Holyfield's got a golden opportunity here. Golden. Scarlett's having some problems. He can't catch the ball out of the backfield. You know, we've been at camp every day. This is a problem for him. It was a problem at Florida. And if he's missing time and not getting the reps in the preseason games, this is bad news. GMs, personnel folks, they love nothing more than to keep all their draft picks. And sometimes that plays into a decision when it's a bubble type of 50-50 call there between two guys. But right now, Holyfield's getting that number three job. Don't sleep on Reggie Bonifant, though, number 39. He's quick, good hands, been in the system. He might beat them all out, get that three spot. Now, how relevant will that spot be when McCaffrey's getting 40 carries a game or, you know, 20 touches, 20 catches, 20 carries, whatever combination Nort puts together? You're going to need a second option there. Cameron Artis Payne, again, made some good plays in the preseason, had a nice catch and run there early in the game. We'll have to see how they utilize the running backs. We touched on that last week on the podcast, but you can never have too many good options in that stable. Curious to see how Scarlett looks if he gets back in action here pretty soon. We'll keep an eye on that for you. Wide receivers, you're not going to be able to tell a whole lot from what you saw there. The guys that were out there, I don't believe any of them are going to make the team. I can break it down for you and give you some hard analysis on Aldrick Robinson or Andrew White. These are guys that can play at a high level, and they may be called upon if, you know, practice squad opportunities present themselves, or perhaps there's an injury here in camp. But your main five here are going to be the usuals: DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, Jarius Sultan of the slot right, Chris Hoagie Hogan, and Torrey Smith, of course, right there. Maybe on the bubble, we'll see. I think they're going to keep six. That leaves Godwin, who put on a show there and was the MVP of my particular taste from that game in Chicago. Left a good impression with coaches. He's got a real good shot at being the number six guy they keep. And if they can use him on punt returns, all the better. Save Hogan there. Utilize him in the offense. Let him be your vertical threat outside. And give the rookie a chance to carve out a beautiful niche for himself. Because Godwin's got the moves. There's a second gear that gives you that Josh Cribbs kind of vibe there. Now, the performance, you got to live up to that. I get that. It's early. He's a rookie. But he's got that second gear. He's got that ability to cut on a dime, good lateral movement, good vision, which is important there, good patience. That's a dynamic piece if he can continue to progress there. The offensive line, again, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this. Greg Little's got to grow here. He's got to continue to develop. You know, the knock on Little here during camp has been pass protection. That was one of the reasons they cited bringing him in for the left side, protecting Cam's blind side. His pass protection skills were touted. He has looked anything but adequate so far. You're right, the camp practice is off a little bit as, you know, hey, they're not going totally full speed here. There's some things at play. Brian Burns is just that good. No, yeah, there's some problems there on that left side. And, you know, the injury to Taylor Moten here, I mean, you're going to have some pieces that have to get moved around here if Little can't make it work. I would be shocked if everybody's healthy to see 74 starting at left tackle. He's not getting it done thus far. Three games to go. We'll see how it works out. Yeah, you got Trey Boston taking heat again for taking a poor angle. Twitter loves nothing more than to pull highlights out from 2014 to show other people, hey, look now, there's a guy taking some bad goddamn angles now. I don't want to sign this guy back. Come on now. Give it a rest there, Gramps. All right, come on. Give 33 a couple games here to get his feet wet. All right. Cockrell's the guy right now. He's still starting at free safety. I do not think he will be by the end of this preseason. I have confidence Boston was brought here for a reason, and I think he'll find his way into that role very, very soon. We shall see. A lot of things happen. So there, I mean, you got some things you can point out there. Yeah, go back to Brian Burns, though. He stole the show defensively. 10 snaps and 2 sacks. And the quickness, setting up the pass rush, the Von Miller-like ability to little stutter step and pause and throw the left tackle and tight end off and then shoot the gap like an Olympic sprinter to the quarterback. It's a beautiful thing to watch. Honorable mention to Rashawn Golden, by the way, who's had a really tough camp, battling injuries. Looks like he's getting replaced at free safety. The media's all over him. The fans are giving him shit on Twitter. Golden has had enough of it, folks. He's had enough of your shit. He decided to take it back to old 2015 to the peanut punch from Charles Tillman. The peanut punch was made famous by Tillman. He taught the secondary in Chicago back in the late 2000s how to get in there with your fist and force fumbles. It was one of the main reasons Carolina's secondary had 8 of the forced fumbles back in 2015. Since then, it's been ugly. We haven't forced fumbles in the secondary. You're not seeing it. You're not seeing the peanut punch. You're not seeing the tenacity you did back then. Golden's had enough of it. And clearly he wanted to make a play. That's going to look really good on tape, I'm telling you. And he's fit to play that Buffalo nickel spot. He can have a major impact on this defense, even if it's not at free safety. And on top of that, he may start at free safety. It's entirely too early to assume anything. Things happen. And Golden was not drafted, to quote the great John Fox here, to sit around and play tiddlywinks. He's obviously got talent and game. And he's still very much in play to have a major role in this defense. The peanut punch goes a long way in helping that. That was great to see. So we'll see how things look at practice. We're back in Spartanburg tomorrow morning, big day at camp. We want to get back and see Cam in action, see if he can make those tight window throws with accuracy. The last couple days of practice before they left to Chicago, the balls were floating. They were sailing. Now, we're not going to go all media hype on you and say, oh, there's some problems brewing here. It doesn't have that feel to it to me. It has a feel of somebody who worked his ass off all week, made hard throws in camp, went over and beyond probably what they were asking him to do, and showed a lot of tenacity and showed a lot of ability in doing so. And maybe there's just a little wear and tear that needs to get a little healed up. You know, you get shoulder surgery, people think it's a bionic arm. It's not. It's still very much a part of what you are and who you are physically. It's still on your mind, I'm sure. There's mechanic issues you're learning. The muscle memory needs to come back. We'll see if the rust is knocked off now and how sharp he looks tomorrow. The brain looks great, from what I can see. He's happy. He's in a good place, man. There's a general perspective on what we saw Thursday night. You don't want to put too much time and effort into breaking down preseason game number one that essentially was preseason game number four-ish. Very few starters in there that are even going to make the team. Vernon Butler, you have got to start making some plays, brother. This is not good, man. You've got people breathing down your neck now. Gerald McCoy's here. You got a brand new defense. You're a little bit of a misfit there in a 34. Where do you put Butler? He's not a real true nose tackle. He's certainly not a five technique end. And he's fighting for a job here. It's a former first round pick we're talking about. I saw fans on Twitter. I saw journalists on Twitter. God almighty, a damn journalist is saying, what you do is you trade him back to the Giants and give Gettleman his guy back and... No, you don't. There's no fucking way you do that. You're not getting anything for Vernon Butler. There's not a guy, there's not a general manager in the league, including nipple shorts Gettleman, who's going to bite on that. I can look at that film on the All-22, and I can see right away there is no value there. So this trade talk stuff, this fantasy world that fans and some reporters live in, that this is just another franchise year on Madden, and I'm going to pull the trigger on this trade, and I'm turning the trade approval section off on Madden, because damn it, I'm trading Vernon Butler for Golden Tate. I'm going to get rid of Butler. I'm going to trade him out to Arizona for Larry Fitzgerald. Give me a fucking break. Vernon Butler may make this team. I hope he does. I really do. I don't want to see anybody's career go in the tank. But he did look terrible against backups. He basically was a tackle, the Montgomery run for the touchdown. Go back and look at that. It was terrible. And Marcus Haynes, too. A great game from him. On a wham block, he totally got owned. You want to play with the big boys, 98. I know you're feeling good right now, and he had a hell of a day. You got to defend the run, man. But Vernon Butler's got me... I'm telling you, man, my blood pressure goes up when we start talking about Big 92. He's made one big play since he's been here. And even that damn play got called back. It was the field goal block, 2016, at home against New Orleans, the all-blue jerseys. Butler gets up there, gets his mitt up, makes a great block. Keekly takes it back, and you got Bradbury with a damn block in the back right there. Now, they went on, scored a touchdown, but still, that's 2016 for you. I have yet to see Vernon Butler make any contribution since then. He's just a there guy. That's what he's one of those there guys. He's there. Sit him in the middle like a big old boulder and make somebody run around him. Well, that's not going to work in this defense. Too many moving parts, too many variables. And he's not a nose tackle. You got your nose tackle in Poe. You got your nose tackle in Kyle Love. You don't need Vernon Butler. You get the further away you get from the team, you hear, this is where I get so fucking annoyed with reporters, because these guys that cover the league and get paid handsomely for it, deep breath, Johnny, these reporters that make big money to know these things, okay, from the outside, they see Vernon Butler, former first round pick, struggling in Carolina, trade value. That's how they analyze that. So they send out tweets such as, former first-round pick Vernon Butler, not the best fit with Carolina's 3-4 defense, possibly a trade partner in Minnesota. It's just speculative bullshit. And there's no accounting for what's going on with that individual. Being a first-round pick means nothing. when he plays at a JV level. So you got to do something there. As for the rest of the defensive line, sorry, folks, and serenity now. Let's all take a deep breath. Nice calming deep breath. Let me take a little sip of my Diet Coke, a little Mike Francesa action here. Crisp Diet Coke. Vernon Butler just, and it's not his fault. It's Dave Gettleman's fat ass's fault. There's no reason to have drafted Vernon goddamn Butler in the first round. I could go back and play the game and look at the 50 guys that were drafted after Butler. That would make my head spin. How and why that guy got picked first round following a Super Bowl season, I'll never understand it. But so it is in the NFL. Very few things I understand. Guys are paid handsomely to make mistakes every day. Egregious mistakes that people like me see coming. Because we study the right things. We look at the right things on film. We pay attention to what's between the lines, not where you were drafted or what your chemistry's like in the locker room or what type of guy he is off the field. That's none of that shit matters to me. Play football, perform and execute.
One Panther Podcast. John Ellis.
All right, welcome back. One Panther Podcast. It's guest time now. And Nick Carboni, WCNC Charlotte, kind enough to take some time with us today. The Chicago game, we saw what happened there. Not a lot of starters in sight. Some good young guys got some action. A lot of things to take inventory of in that game. Let's start with you. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can say mixed results about any preseason game, especially preseason opener. But I thought everything was more on the positive side, I think. You know, even though we're not too bogged down in the wins and losses, the win was nice. That means, you know, not first string, but second string, third string, fourth string, what have you,
right,
all played well enough to get a complete victory between all, you know, three or four levels of guys that were playing. I mean, I think the things that stood out have been talked about. Brian Burns certainly stood out, Marquise Haynes, and you know, when you get, you talk about getting the offensive guys in space, but now on defense with the way they want to run things and the personnel they have to match it, if you get some of these defensive guys in space, I think we saw Thursday night what that can look like. People keep asking me about Brian Burns and is he worth, you know, is the hype real and blah, blah, blah. And I keep cautioning people, and because it's just training camp and it's hard to tell what guys are like, especially defensively when you can't even tackle, you can only thud at the most. But I think Thursday night kind of bumped me more in the direction that he's going to be a pretty key contributor on this defensive scheme this year.
I tend to agree with that. You know, I've been bullish on Burns since we've seen him there at camp every day. You're not seeing these guys full go in Spartanburg, and you get him out there in a game situation. You know, Burns had 10 snaps last night. He had 2 sacks. That's a pretty good ratio right there. So I'm feeling pretty confident, but you've seen this before. I mean, Everett Brown's a good example of a guy who flashed at times, and there's dozens of guys out there that look great in camp and can't cut it during the games, but it was a impressive start. Now, you've been here since 2016, right?
Yeah, I was, you know, I don't like to tell people that too much because that means I got here right after 15 and won a Super Bowl and immediately had a 6-0.
This is the first thing I thought, unfortunately, when I saw it.
Two of my 3 seasons here have been below 500 without playoffs, so I hope I'm not a bad luck charm. I think we'll change that this year.
Well, I bring that up for a reason here. You've seen the ebb and flow of this franchise since that Super Bowl run. David Gettleman, of course, with the Josh Norman situation and the way the roster was managed at times with some of the veterans, and then his untimely departure and Herney coming back, and then the Richardson situation. What a whirlwind that all was. For you covering that, did take me inside that curtain a little bit. What was that like?
Well, I think, you know, you start with the game at Denver to begin 16, right back on the national stage, right back against the same team that slugged you in the Super Bowl. And the more I think back to that game and hear Ron Rivera talk about it even now, the more I realize how much that loss and the way it went down and where it went down and who it went down against really just gut punched that 2016 team. You add that to the fact that, you know, right or wrong, they lose Josh Norman. You know, maybe Dave Gettleman shouldn't have paid Josh Norman all that money, but the way it went down and who Josh Norman was on that defense and to that locker room certainly kind of compounded everything as well. So, you know, that season was really, I really do think, lost right then and there. I don't think they were going to really be able to recover from that loss at Denver. And then you go to 17, and they put together a nice run, but they're just so hampered by injuries. I believe Luke was out a handful of games that year.
Right.
By the end of the year, you know, you have the wide receiver group that consists of, like, Kate Clay.
Yes.
And Brent Person.
Slim Pickens. It was rough.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, they really didn't have a chance in that game against New Orleans. It was pretty competitive, you know, almost till the very end there anyway.
Right.
And then last year, you know, it just is a dichotomy of the Panthers' last 25 years of a 6-2 start and a 7-9 finish. Just so up and down. So it's been interesting, but I think what I've really come to realize towards the end of last year was that's, you know, it's not indicative of Ron Rivera that this team and this franchise overall has not had back-to-back winning seasons. I think he's been able to guide this ship well during his now 9-year tenure. He's had a lot of bad breaks, and he hasn't been the perfect coach, but he is the best coach for this team right now in this window and with this core that they still have.
I totally agree. No coach is perfect. What Ron did for me as an observer in 2017 sold me tremendously. You got injuries. You're dealing with Brenton Burson and Kalen Clay as two of your key receivers now. And then the Richardson situation, December. My God, you think of a head coach in that situation dealing with that, much like Belichick having to deal with 95 in Cleveland, with the team falling apart in that city and being ushered out to Baltimore. That killed that team's playoff momentum. And this could have done the same, but Ron's team kept winning. They won 11 games, Nick. That year sold me.
Yeah, I think just what you said, seen in just three seasons here with the ups and the downs and the distractions, whether the team's really, really good or doing really, really badly, is that there aren't many better guys in coaching than Ron Rivera at insulating his team from that and getting his team to use those situations to come together to play well. You didn't see that team give up on Ron Rivera last year. You saw that around the league with other guys that ultimately were let go, and you see it every year with teams that kind of fall apart towards the end. That team battled and battled and battled till the very end for Ron Rivera, and talking to guys in the locker room, they were insistent that he not be let go. I think that would have set them back this year if they had done that. So, you know, you don't see, that is a mark of a good coach, is to be able to kind of use those situations to, you know, build a team from within and have it perform for you under the most dire circumstances.
Certainly. Looking at where they are now, David Tepper comes in, the new owner. Everybody's talking about, you know, Mr. Tepper and what he's brought to the franchise. I have been impressed every step of the way with every move he's made, not only with the forward thinking with the analytics and whatnot, but the one thing I thought might not happen was reaching back in time and making the past of this team a big deal. And he's gone leaps and bounds beyond what I ever thought. Were you surprised that Tepper, though, kept Rivera and Herney after 7 out of 8 losing last year?
I wasn't. I think Tepper, you know, is a guy that obviously clearly wants to win. He stated that thrice in his opening statement, opening press conference here in Charlotte. But I also think that he's made his career, he's made his billions off of not only gambles and big bets, but calculated ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he saw the value in Ron Rivera as coach, saw the value in Marty Herney as coach, and really saw the things you and I just talked about in terms of Rivera's leadership, how this team plays for him, and that, okay, this has been the core for the better part of a decade now. When you talk about Rivera, Olsen, Kuechly, and Cam Newton, and some others, and Marty Herney, now 2.0, you know, this is still the window we're operating in, and things can get better than they were last year. And I think he was smart in taking into account, you know, you never want to make excuses, but all that happened last year and how much of it was on Cam Newton's right shoulder, and how that affected in a big way their finish.
You wonder what would have happened. Had that not gone down, you never know where this team would have ended up. But that's football, man, and they slid with it. They had seven chances in a row there, as we talked about in the podcast last week, to solidify a playoff berth, and the pieces couldn't fall together, and it was that right shoulder. Going into this year, you've seen Cam. You've seen his throws. You've obviously, I'm not a doctor, neither are you, but we've got a little bit of an eye for sports here. What's your feeling on where Cam is, not only mentally but physically right now?
You know, I think what he said a couple weeks ago when we got a chance to talk to him at training camp was smart, I think. You know, talking about being smarter and, you know, being more wary or aware of his body when it needs rest and kind of taking the foot off the gas a little bit when he needs to. I also think, you know, he doesn't, you know, everybody wants to talk about, is he losing his fastball? Does he need his fastball? Well, I think there are times, yeah, he's going to have to bang one on a slant route and an out route, you know, just rip it. But there's also times, and I think we're seeing this a lot in camp, when he goes deep, it's more of a kind of a lay it in there, right, deep ball.
Yep.
And hopefully he's got the guys to go catch up to those this year. We think he does, at least in Curtis Samuel and then DJ Moore a little bit of a different way. But, you know, I think you could tell when Ron Rivera first saw Cam Newton after that surgery, which I think was like the day after, that Cam was just really happy about how it went, what they found, and about the timeline going forward, and was just completely all in on however they wanted him to go about the rehab process. And that's why he's at where he is today, where he's thrown in some form or fashion all but one day of training camp.
It's good stuff, man. Nick Carboni, WCNC Charlotte sports director up there for NBC Charlotte, joining us here. One Panther podcast, been kind enough to take some time with us today. Nick, what would you say would be the number one obstacle for this team externally this year? The division seems to be getting better. We hear it every year. This is like the 12th annual We're Going to Shock the World Invitational down in Tampa. I don't know if I buy it quite yet down there, but the other two teams that have been in the mix, Atlanta's sneaky good all the time, and New Orleans, of course, is the contender there. Where do you think Carolina fits into the mix? And it's early yet, but how do you see that shaping up?
I think this team is good enough to, you know, you can't put them in the elite category in the NFC right now because they haven't been there in a while, but I think they're right below that. So say you have New Orleans and the Rams, it's probably somebody else I'm not thinking of right off the top of my head, right at the top of a, you know, 3-4 team list. I think Carolina fits in the mix right underneath that, you know, with the Seattles and maybe the Dallases, but probably at this point above Dallas. So we'll see what Green Bay's got this year. But and Minnesota, I think they should be right up there, you know, competing for a playoff spot the whole way. And then once they hopefully get into the playoffs, being able to make a run. But you never know. I mean, this is also, they're also a team that could come out right out of the gate, given their schedule, and put themselves right at the top of the NFC pretty quickly.
It's a fascinating team, Nick, to watch, because they had the capability of putting up 31 points the first half against Tampa Bay, and 2 weeks later, you know, seven-game losing streak. It's the nature of the league, but this team in particular seems to have a penchant for that, and that's why they're always fun to watch. You never know what you're going to get, man. Last question for you. You've worked in the business for a while. You've covered a lot of events. Give me a little insight as to your favorite event you've ever covered. Where's the one place you've been where you have the fondest memories?
I've gotten to go to the last two Super Bowls, which I had never before that, and it has been amazing. I mean, you can't beat that, having a seat at the Super Bowl and getting paid to be there.
Sure, right.
I hope the next time I go, the Panthers are there with me, maybe this year in Miami. I would have to say, aside from that, the Final Four couple of years ago when North Carolina beat Gonzaga in the final out in Phoenix. I covered the NCAA tournament in bits and pieces at Tennessee. They never made it past the Sweet 16. So to cover a team from start to finish was absolutely amazing. And obviously they have a huge, huge following out here. And South Carolina ended up making it right there along with them. I mean, it was amazing. And then that was definitely tops, I think, for me. Got to cover the 2011 World Series in St. Louis, which was awesome. One of the best games ever. Game 6, David Fries walk-off home run.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then
right
this year, I jumped on the Zion Williamson train and followed them in their run to the Elite Eight. So it's been fun. I've gotten to do a lot of things since I came to Charlotte, just because of the diversity of the sports market and all the things we have here. And it just kind of seems like it never ends. I keep getting to do better and better stuff every year.
And Nick Carboni, WCNC Charlotte Sports Director, of course. Check him out on Twitter, Nick Carboni, WCNC over there. And he's a great guy, great follow. Knows his stuff. Check him out. Nick, I appreciate the time, man.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
All right, buddy.
One Panther Podcast. John Ellis.